No deal. China may not greenlight any agreement for TikTok to sell its U.S. operations. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A deadline this week is fast approaching for TikTok to sell its U.S. business to an American company or risk being banned in the country altogether. Microsoft said Sunday its offer to buy the Chinese video sharing platform was rejected, leading to speculation an offer from the tech titan's rival, Oracle, would be accepted. But as the BBC's Karishma Vaswani reports, Beijing may have other plans.
The latest twist is that Chinese state media is now reporting that Beijing won't allow a deal with either Microsoft or Oracle to go through. The reason for this, of course, is what we've talked about before, that it would be in violation of the latest rules in China of the export of sensitive tech that China doesn't want to be sold to the outside world. So at this point, what we're hearing from Chinese media is that even the Oracle bid, which has been reported by outlets like the Wall Street Journal, may well not go ahead. We're very fast approaching that deadline President Trump has set for TikTok to find a U.S. owner for its U.S. operations. I think the next few days will be key.
So Oracle hasn't yet confirmed this sale, but you have spoken to some people inside of the company. What are you hearing?
With the caveat that all of this is so fluid right now, but they've been talking about whether or not it even makes sense for Oracle to go about trying to acquire the U.S. assets of TikTok. Ultimately, this is a social media platform. And so the question has been asked, why does Oracle need this? But I think all of this really underlines how this Chinese company has become caught in the middle of the U.S.-China tech war. And it's not the first, right? This is the second time that we're seeing a high-profile Chinese-owned firm slap bang in the middle of these two great superpowers.
Not a done deal yet. Many twists and turns ahead. The BBC's Karishma Vaswani. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Victoria.
Well, continuing with the theme of big tech meeting politics, the Silicon Valley chip giant NVIDIA agreed to buy British chipmaker Arm Holdings from Japan's SoftBank in a deal worth $40 billion. But once again, the tie-up isn't without political controversy, as the BBC's Will Bain reports.
Arm has been described as the jewel in the crown of British technology and employs more than 3,000 people across the UK, and the microchips it manufactures are in literally billions of devices around the world, everything from TVs to Apple and Samsung smartphones and home thermostats. As a result of both its success and the kind of fields it's in, what happens to the firm and its technology raises temperatures. This was Arm's co-founder, Herman Hausler, speaking to the BBC this morning.
No, I think it's an absolute disaster for Cambridge, UK and Europe.
It also reaches the highest levels of politics. In fact, when the company was initially sold in 2016 to Japan's SoftBank, it sparked an almighty political row, and pledges from the then Prime Minister, Theresa May, to beef up the UK government's powers to call in and block takeovers of British firms it sees as of strategic national importance. Those calls are once again in full throat from the likes of Mr. Hausler.
This is a UK company. It is clearly in the national interests that it stays a UK company. So government clearly has the power to prevent that.
Don't expect him to be the last. This is another occasion where cutting-edge technology and geopolitics are colliding, meaning the path forward is neither clear nor likely to be swift. In London, I'm the BBC's Will Bain for Marketplace.
Checking the numbers now, global stocks are higher as Oxford University and AstraZeneca restart final stage trials of their coronavirus vaccine. Tests were paused last week after a British volunteer fell ill. Stocks in Asia ended the session higher between 0.5% and 0.8%. European benchmarks are all up as much as 0.4%. The name you need to know today, Yoshida Suga. He comes not from a Japanese political dynasty, but from a family of strawberry growers. Today, the country's ruling party chose him to succeed his longtime boss, Shinzo Abe, as its leader. And Mr. Suga is now certain to be confirmed as the new prime minister in a parliamentary vote on Wednesday. Kathy Matsui, vice chair of Goldman Sachs Japan, explains what his economic priorities are likely to be.
I think his main priority will be to continue the overall economic policy agenda of the Abe administration, not wanting to rock the boat too much, really continuing this policy of easy both monetary and fiscal policy mix to ensure that the economy can not just survive but thrive going into 2021. But I think there will be some potentially interesting surprises on the reform agenda front. He is known for standing up to the bureaucracies, which is quite a rare thing amongst Japanese politicians, and he has had a few victories of his own in the past. So that, I think, might be the more interesting aspect to watch when he releases formally his official platform.
Is there any speculation what those reforms might be?
So, for instance, he was the person who led the campaign, so to speak, to put pressure on mobile phone operators to lower their cell phone charges, because the view was that Japan's cell phone charges were, on average, much higher than, for example, other developed markets. Another thing he's been very big on, and frankly, until COVID happened, was very successful with, was revitalizing inbound tourism, right? Japan used to get 8 million tourists a year, like one-tenth of France. And it went up to close to, you know, over 30 million. So this was a way for him to revitalize the regions. There's a lot of, I think, untapped potential he saw by bringing in more tourists to the rural parts of Japan. So I think possibly continuing on those two threads, he's also very big on digital transformation, something that Japan desperately needs because it really needs a productivity revolution. So he's even talking about setting up a digital ministry, which would be really, I think, fascinating because you could break through a lot of silos that are governing this huge arena.
As you mentioned, when he threw his hat into the ring, Mr. Suda said he'd continue Shinzo Abe's signature economic policy. But he's also said he plans to immediately focus on repairing the coronavirus-damaged economy. But isn't coronavirus economic policy now, in a sense, the economic policy that'll sort of set the tone for his tenure?
Indeed, and he's also well aware that the threat of corona mixed with influenza means that the next few months going into the winter could, again, be another very tense field, stressful period for the economy. So I think what he's trying to say between the lines is that he is prepared to deliver additional stimulus if need be, if the economy needs more help, if small, medium-sized enterprises need help, if households need assistance on the labor front. I think he is open to providing that additional assistance because, again, that will be his number one priority, is to preserve economic growth.
Kathy Matsui, Vice Chair of Goldman Sachs Japan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Finally, OPEC turned 60 today, but the coronavirus pandemic has muted planned celebrations. With fewer people traveling, the oil producers group has struggled with low prices and recently cut output. It's also facing long-term threats from investment in U.S. shale and the move away from fossil fuels. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.